Hey, it's Todd Stacey, and this is In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. Today, we're talking with U.S. Senator Richard Shelby, and it's fitting timing because today, Senator Shelby has become the longest-serving senator from the state of Alabama in history. Today, which is Sunday, Shelby has now served 11,748 days in the U.S. Senate, and that surpasses former Senator John Sparkman's record of 11,747 days. That's 32 years and 59 days in the Senate as of today. While setting the length of service record is certainly an accomplishment unto itself, I would say it's the substance of those 32 years that has defined Shelby's legacy as a prolific appropriator of funds back to his home state. Leveraging his influence on the Senate Appropriations Committee, Shelby has been responsible for dozens of major federal spending projects throughout the state. Just to name a few recent ones, you have the relocation of thousands of FBI workers to the new campus in Huntsville, a continued buildup of missile defense engineering at Redstone Arsenal, a next-generation comprehensive cancer research center at UAB, the new USDA soil laboratory coming to Auburn, funds to dredge the shipping channel at the Port of Mobile, which is a huge deal. And remember, these that I'm listing, that's just in the last year. Last April, Shelby reached the pinnacle of his long career by ascending to the chairmanship of the Appropriations Committee. Now, most Alabamians who have anything to do with politics or government funding were gleeful about this because they were dreaming about all the federal dollars that Shelby would now be able to direct back home. And it's hard to blame anybody for thinking that because just consider the billions that Shelby already brought back even before he was chairman. But for Shelby, taking the reins of the committee meant an opportunity to reform the long-broken appropriations process. I wrote about Shelby's plan to fix the appropriations process last year, and I encourage you to go read that. But I can get into it a little bit here just to explain how the process works. Congress's most fundamental responsibility under the Constitution is to allocate funding. And here's how that process is supposed to work based on current law and what's referred to in Washington as regular order. First, the president submits a budget. It's his proposal for the entirety of the federal government. Then, taking or leaving ideas from the president's proposal, the House and Senate pass a budget resolution that serves as a general framework for how federal dollars are to be spent. After that, members of the Appropriations Committees, House and Senate, work to fill in that framework by crafting 12 different bills funding the various aspects of the government. The Department of Defense, Veterans Affairs, Agriculture, and so on, all making up 12 different bills funding the various departments. The full House and Senate eventually debate, amend, and vote on all those bills to send them to the president's desk. Now, that entire process is not easy under the best of circumstances, but lately, Washington's political environment has made it virtually impossible to get that done. Perhaps the biggest reason why is senators taking advantage of a Senate rule that allows any member of the body, any member of the Senate, to block a bill from coming up for a vote. Say you don't like how much health care is funded in the labor HHS bill. You can object. You didn't get the rider prohibiting that thing you don't like in the Milcon VA appropriations bill. You can object. Let's say you're running for president and you want to turn a relatively obscure funding line item into a political firestorm that benefits you. Well, you can object. And with each objection comes a threat to filibuster. And each time that happens, the Senate's ability to debate and vote their way through individual appropriations bills dies a little more. So over the course of the year, the backlog builds and Congress ends up in the last minute crisis-driven position of passing these 2,000-plus page spending bills that very few lawmakers have read. That's a problem. Short of abandoning the filibuster, the only way to reform the appropriations process is by changing senators' habits, and that's Shelby's plan. If all senators in both parties agree to hold off on the objections and the filibuster threats, these appropriations bills can come to the floor for full debate. It's what Politico called the hold hands and jump approach. And to get support for it, Shelby talked to Republicans and Democrats on the Appropriations Committee. He got Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on board, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and most importantly, his Vice Chairman on the Appropriations Committee, Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy. He also took advantage of a growing frustration over the also broken Senate confirmations process to get the body to address both problems at the same time. And I have to say, the senator called his shot. By September, the Senate had cleared spending bills making up 75% of the discretionary budget. That's a feat that hasn't been accomplished in 20 years. But after the election, as the debate over border security got more and more heated, the rest of the appropriations measures, that 25%, got caught up in the fray. When I sat down with Shelby for this In the Weeds podcast, he was in the midst of negotiating a budget deal that would keep the federal government open and find balance on the question of border wall funding. Though I realize our interview is a bit dated with talk of State of the Union and whatnot, it's also fascinating, and so I wanted to leave all that in there. Shelby talked about how and why he went on the Appropriations Committee in the first place, how he went about his mission to fix the federal spending process, his vast network of former staffers, some of whom have come back to Shelby's office, and lots more in our 20-minute talk. I want to thank Senator Shelby and his staff for graciously allowing me some time during what was a terribly busy week, and I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Senator.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me in your office. Really appreciate you taking
the
time.
Well, it's good for you to be back in Washington.
It really is.
You spent some time up here. You know where everything is.
I think so. They hadn't moved everything, at least, but it was great weather, State of the Union, that ended up being this
last
week.
A while. I thought that the president, his delivery was good. I thought he reached out. He had a few moments of partisanship, but he gave more of a bipartisan outreach speech than I've ever known him to give. He even got two or three ovations from the Democrats. I'm not going to say everything, but where we could work together and so forth. I thought overall it was a good night for him.
Talked about immigration a lot, talked about border security a lot. I mean, y'all are in this situation. Do you think he's going to be successful? Do you think the committee ultimately...
That's a central question he just asked. Will we be successful? We don't know. We've been working on it. We've been talking about it all day. And I had the border people up today with the conference committee. The not politicians like me, like the president or like the speaker, but the people who are head of the border, non-political professionals, to testify, talk before in a closed hearing before the conference committee and staff today. And because what we want to know is what do they need, not what the president says, what I say, what the speaker says. And they told us basically what they needed. Said, look, we need barriers. We need
physical technology.
We need people. We need it all, a comprehensive thing. Said technology, you know, it evolves and they're doing a lot better with technology. But he said that without some barriers is folly. But the barriers without technology is folly. And all of it without good people will never work. So we need all three, a comprehensive approach. That's what we've been pushing for. We hope that this meeting today create a dynamic with the conferees. We'll have to see if it does. Time's ticking away. And I'd rather forge a legislative solution to this. That's what we're supposed to do. If we can, if we can't do it, the president might have to do something else.
The emergency declaration. Mm-hmm. Well, let me back up because it has been, you know, before this situation came about, you engineered a pretty rare feat. You got the appropriations process cranking again, regular order cranking in. I guess
three-fourths of the appropriations on time, on the money. And we could have gotten probably 95%. And some of the House members were in a hurry to go home.
Okay.
And we have seven bills right now, including Homeland Security. It constitutes about 25% of all the budget would pass the other. And Of the six, we basically got that wrapped up. You know, if we can do it, it's our obligation to do it. We got close, better than we've done in a long time. But you got to get to the substance. You got to try to make it work.
Well, where did that start? I mean, I'm really into the process, and I'm curious, where did you get started? I mean,
Where did I get started? Well, I think you get started by experience like yours in life. But I've been on the Appropriation Committee a long time. I've been on the Defense Subcommittee a long time. I've chaired two or three or four of the subcommittees. So we tried to make it work. I knew I had to work with my counterpart on the other side of the aisle. Sometimes they were in control, and I was ranking. And we'd try to figure out what we could do, not for ourselves, but what does we need to do in substance for America. And if we do that, we generally work together. And so I came out of the school, I guess you would call it, of Senator Byrd was chairman of the committee, there's Democrats in control. Senator Inouye was for a short time before he died, but Senator Stevens was a mentor to me. He liked to do things on time, which I do, be on time, start on time, get to it and see, make it work, knowing you're not going to get everything you want, because there are divergent opinions there. But you can get, if you sit down and you're trying to be rational with the other side, you generally can, not always. So that's how we worked out for the first time in 20 years. We were glad to do this. We worked hard at it, and we want to continue to do that. But we first got to finish this 25%.
Well, given all that success, are you a little disappointed in the way it has ended up? Because it's such a, you know, big news item.
I was disappointed at the end. I was not disappointed with what we did, because unheard of up here in recent years.
Well, you said first time in 20 years,
uh-huh.
And I mean, really, I remember when
you've been here.
Yes, sir. But I remember when you became chairman, and you said we're going to fix the appropriations process. And I just, maybe I'm cynical, but
oh,
I thought
you gotta be.
I thought, well, that's a great goal, but that's a huge.
Well, we're going to continue to work on that. We'll get through this hurdle. I don't know when. We hope in the next few days. But sooner or later, this will all end in some kind of negotiation, if history is a guide, and it generally is. So what we'd like to do is get this in where we can start on next year's budget. We did a $1.7 trillion appropriation. We got national security interests here. We got a lot of other would necessary things. And I want to do the job. I want to get going. I want to work. I want to have professional staff. All that's very important. And you set the tone and you set the schedule. So we've done that. I worked with Senator Leahy. You'd think Senator Leahy and Shelby, man alive. You know, their votes, they never vote on anything together. We do a few things. But we're old friends, just like, you know, you got all kind of friends. And we decided together that he wants the process to work. He wants the program to work. So I had this, I call it a harebrained idea, that I came up with one morning. I've talked about it a lot, and press talked about it a lot. I had the idea sitting over here one morning. Before I forgot it, I ran over to McConnell's office, because I'd forget it on the way probably. And my idea was to join the Defense Appropriation Subcommittee, which is the largest, and I chair that committee, with HHS, which Senator Blunt from Missouri chairs, I used to chair that, which is the second largest, depicts social, a lot of social issues mm-hmm. there, with defense. And I talked to McConnell and Schumer and Dick Durbin, who was ranking on that. I said, look, it's probably a harebrained idea. I described my own. It probably won't work, but should we try it? And they said, yes, sir. Said, it probably won't work. It worked. And it set the tone for the other stuff, because if that had failed, most of the house crumbles. So we're going to continue to think that way and try to join things together. And I have to say this about Durbin, who's the Democratic whip. I've known Dick Durbin a long time, and we don't always agree. but we agree on a lot of things, and we figured out what we could agree on and put the, a lot of the little stuff aside and put, try to put America first. Because we've been here, you know, we all want parochial, have parochial interests, but we don't have as many as we used to have. If that makes sense.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, it does. Well, you know, this is an era of very short attention spans. Mm-hmm. And, hey, let's get my soundbite on Fox News. Let's get my soundbite on MSNBC and kind of quick, you know, and especially this new class. I mean, it is, you got a million Twitter followers, and that's what counts. And yet, what y'all seem to have done is gather the deal makers. The
substance.
Yes, sir. Well, tell me about that. Does it matter that you have these, you know, long-serving people who have worked together for years?
I think you need experience, but that's up to you. You need some experience on the committees. The committees, all committees matter. Some matter more, and you can't just walk in and try to run the Appropriations Committee. It's too complicated. You know, you wouldn't. He worked over there as a clerk and, on the Commerce and Justice Science. I brought him back as my chief of staff, but he understands that. You know, you put that together. You got to make it work. You got to work with the other side. It's tedious. You got to. We got some really smart people over there, but it's necessary. So experience counts. Wanting to make the process work, to do your job, in other words. Why do people send you up here? To do your job. American people expect, people of Alabama, we're part of them. They expect me, I believe, and that's what I was taught, and you are too, I'm sure, to do your job, to be on time, to be on top of things, to be prepared, to know what you're doing, and to do it. But if you got a 10-second attention time, you can't deal with this kind of stuff. Or it won't matter, but it does matter. And I think a lot of that is probably contributed to the breakdown of some of our things that you alluded to.
Well, speaking of Alabama, what is there anything in the next round of budget talks that you're looking at? I saw you were talking in Huntsville about FBI and things like that. Sounds like there's some more CJS stuff coming down. And
big stuff.
Okay.
Well, Alabama's on fire right now. North Alabama's really on fire, you know, as far as economic development and opportunities. The Mobile area is doing well. The area of Opelika, Auburn is doing well. Tuscaloosa, my area, is doing well. But I'm doing everything I can. I found out long ago, just send people money, that doesn't help any, whether it's your children or your uncle's children. Or anybody else, but to create conditions for them to help themselves, to create jobs and wealth and opportunities. The conditions, good infrastructure. Education, number one. Education, infrastructure, good work habits, open for business, not open for regulation. All this, we've got to get there. And I think you have to think that way. I'd like to see Alabama become more and more business friendly. We've come a long way. My gosh, we've come a long way. But I'd like to see Alabama come the number one business friendly, come here, we're open for business in the United States. And we're getting there. You know this, you've witnessed it.
Well, the legislature's working on an infrastructure plan.
And that's important. That's important because they match a lot of our money.
Right.
And what we need is a big infrastructure bill. Here, the President talked about it a little last night. That's going to talk a lot of money. I went on my fourth committee to be there, Environment and Public Works. I'm a junior member of that committee because I wanted Alabama to be represented if there is going to be a big infrastructure bill, because they don't come along every so often. And Alabama's got some infrastructure needs, and we hadn't gotten to that point yet, but I hope to be there because I don't want Alabama to be shut out. And you certainly be shut out if you're not represented, don't you think?
I agree. Well, you mentioned the President. Seems like you've been meeting with him a lot. Generally speaking, what's your relationship with him compared to other presidents?
Well, everybody's different. My favorite president I've had up here was President Reagan. He was on top of things. He'd have us all down, different ones, different down. Had me for breakfast one morning, trying to get me to change parties.
You know? Okay.
And which I did. He'd change parties.
Eventually, you know? Yeah.
All of this. But he was good. President Bush, 41, was good. I had a good relationship with him. I had a good relationship with George W. Bush. I had him in my home for raising money, you know, in Tuscaloosa one time. I had a strained relationship with Clinton, although he's a smart guy. Carter, I was new there, you know, my first president. I knew him, but I didn't know him well. But I didn't think he was a strong president at all. And Obama, I knew him from the Senate, but I didn't have a strong relationship. Our paths didn't come together, you know, on a lot of issues. But on President Trump, going back to him, I use the term, he's unique. He is. We all are unique to a point. He's unique, but a lot of his policies, I've supported a lot of them. He spoke to me last night. As a matter of fact, I might be talking to him the next day or so. And about where we are, how we can get to yes. But Trump, he's been used to getting things done. He's been in business. And he's run into the bureaucracy and the stall. He's run into a lot of other obstacles. But a lot of things he's done, I think he's right. I've supported the tax cut. You know, look at the economy. The economy has been hot in the last several years, as hot as in my lifetime. In my lifetime. Think about that. I believe he's absolutely right. You want me to continue to talk?
Absolutely.
I think he's absolutely right on our trade stuff. I've told the president, I said, Mr. President, I'm not a tariff man. We need a trade, but we need to be smart in negotiating our trade agreements. And I'm not saying we've been the smartest. We've been outgunned and out-negotiated in a lot of our trade agreements. We need to revisit these trade agreements, see how do they work for us and what are the detriments. I think he's doing that. He did it with the North American Free Trade Agreement. He did it. Look at the balance of trade, what we call the current account, with all these countries. Wow. China, number one. And I think he's absolutely right, and I believe he'll get it because he is unique. They don't know how to understand him. So they're unease. Everybody is like that. So I think that's a positive for him in negotiating with the Chinese because they're long-term thinkers. They're thinking world domination, economically first, maybe military after that, 20, 30, 40 years from now. You understand?
Yes, sir.
So Trump is right, I believe, to try to bring him to the table and not let them know what cards he's got or how he'll play them. And heretofore, we hadn't had that, have we?
He's, no question about it, more aggressive. And I think the party, in many ways, has changed its tune in terms of a lot of people resisted the tariff, aggressive stuff. A lot of people are embracing
tariff's
it.
Temporary.
Right.
But I think that's to get to an end on a better trade agreement.
Well, it's working with the Europeans. They're
working
different.
It's going to work with them. China, Canadians in Mexico, too. You know, we're getting better deals.
Yes, sir. Well, I don't want to take all your time, but I had one more question. You are known for having a vast network of people that have, worked for you, gone on to other things.
Oh, man, they've done well. I guess these two will do well, too.
What struck me, as you became chairman, is a lot of those folks came back home.
They did.
And you've got a lot of your team managing committees or your subcommittees, and now Dane's back in the home office. Has that been? Has that been having your team back together and describe how that works?
Oh, it works. First of all, in Congress or in business or anything else, you got to have good people, and you got to try them. You got to start with a resume, but you better not end there. And I've been fortunate to have great folks work with me. Look at all the financial stuff today. Two of the SEC members, Republicans right now, they work for me on the banking committee. I'm close to them.
Wow.
The chairman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation right now, she was my general counsel. She's very smart and very good. I got a couple of people at Treasury right now that work for me. But it's not me, it's that I gave them the opportunity to excel, to do well, to prove, and they had it in them to do it. So I'm glad to be around them. And we've got one pending now that will be, if he's confirmed, and Republicans all be for him, and Democrats will fight him. Worked for me as an economist. He works for the vice president now. Be head of the over Fannie and Freddie Mae, the big financial bank. He's so smart, PhD in economics. I worked with me a long time. But those are the kind of people we want to get. And a lot of them have gone out in the private sector and gotten rich. I got a guy that working at the White House now with. He worked with me on banking, Andrew Allman. My gosh, he's putting a lot of this stuff together. He was up a week or so ago to see me. But I tell him, just do a good job. You know, do a good job for America. Make it work. And they know that. But I think overall what's happened, I've given them an opportunity and the latitude to do well. And a lot of them have. I've had two or three people. Well, I had two other people that were SEC commissioners. Kathy Casey, she's on a lot of boards now. She's on the Penn State Board of Trustees, too. But she worked for me 13 years right out of law school, smart as a whip, man. And President Bush put her on the SEC. She was there 5 years. She's on a lot of boards. She's a fellow over at Georgetown University. Wow, you know? Stuff like that. But we've got some talent in our office right now. We got a lot of talent on the Appropriations Committee. And Dane just left there. But we got some talent on there that we got to have. But we want to keep attracting it, I guess. That leads me to Katie. Katie. We miss her.
Well, we're glad to have her back in Montgomery. So
well, I thought, I didn't know what she'd do. I told Blair, I didn't tell her what, but I knew some of the big headhunters were interested in her, not in Alabama, just everywhere. Hmm. They spotted, it's going to be a woman's world. She'd tell me that anyway, and my wife would. A woman's world, in a sense. Look at the politics, look at the new senators and congressmen, you know, and so forth. But I wish everybody well.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
It does. I understand completely. And thank you so much for your time.
You're a good writer. We read your stuff. But you got stuff. They can be a source to you. You got to interpret it.
Yes, sir.
I don't have any axe to grind. I just want to do a good job. I've been here a while. And, you know, you work to get here. I want to do a good job with the people in Alabama. You mentioned Huntsville earlier. Huntsville is going to be the biggest city in the state down the road.
Really? It's going to eclipse Birmingham?
I don't know. Demographic people said it's going too soon. You know, I don't know. But I'm talking about the city of Birmingham. It's Birmingham, okay. City of Birmingham shrink. Oh, it won't be as big as the metropolitan area. That's about four counties. That's 1 million people, isn't it? But it'll be certainly prosperous, too.
Yes, sir.
But we're doing it. We're moving stuff, but only if the people want to move there. Huntsville got an advantage on education, workforce, one of the most highly educated workforces in the nation, that in Silicon Valley. Isn't that about right? This, wow, makes a difference, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well.
Did I ask you one time, are you related to Judge Stacy out of Centerville?
No, sir.
He was a probate judge there for years.
No, I don't know if I have any relationship.
Claim him there. Anyway. He's a good man.
Okay, all right. Well, he might not claim me, but most of our Stacys are in Georgia, but I'm sure somewhere down the line. And I never could figure out. I worked with Ralph Stacy for years. I never could figure out if we were related, but, you know, somewhere down the line.
Come see us.
Well, thank you again. Thank you for coming on.
Let us know, because you're interested in reporting the news. We're interested in sometimes making it if it's good.
Yes, sir.